Rivers, and welcome to the Liberty Mike Podcast, broadcasting from an undisclosed location in the heart of Dixie. I am Michael, and I'm here with Liberty Larry.
How's it going?
I have an ear infection. It sucks. My throat's sore because of it. Yeah. On the bright side, it gave my doctor an excuse to give me another COVID test.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How did that go?
Well, it's not pleasant. Particularly, it's not as...
So my real question was, did you pass it?
Is it a pass-fail kind of thing? Well, it came up negative. I still do not have COVID. I was this is a waste of time because I'm indestructible.
Exactly. I mean, you should have just opened with that.
I am impervious to COVID.
I don't take these things. I never have it, so...
complete waste of time. Well, and one of my cousins, he got married last year, but he's his party or reception, I guess, is this year because nobody could come to the wedding,
right?
In New Jersey, and so I'm going to have to get at least one more COVID test before I get on a plane. Yeah. Assuming that I can make it up there, I'd like to make it up there, but there's a lot of stuff going on, so I'm not sure that it's going to work out. But at this point, I intend to go up there, and I don't intend to drive because it's like a 17-hour, 18-hour drive.
Yeah.
Although I have considered it, I know places I can stop on the way. Although the last leg would still be like 9 hours, which is more than I like to drive by myself at this point in my life.
So you think any of those places will let you in without a vaccine passport?
Of my friends' houses?
Oh, so you've got friends' houses? I didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the question still stands.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking I could stop in Atlanta and I could stop in Charlotte.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I think both of those places would let you in.
Yeah. But
I think
I'm not 100% on the Charlotte, actually. Had to talk to him. Anyway, that's the worst case scenario. Like the plan is still to fly.
To fly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hate flying anyway. So this is all kind of just a good excuse for me not to fly anywhere.
Oh, I don't mind flying. No, in fact, I like flying because my time is valuable. And like the difference between, all told, it's still kind of crappy because, you got to get to the airport early and you sit around and so on. So probably reasonable guess is like 10 hours back and forth.
Yeah.
Flying.
Yeah.
Including like airport time and what have you. But that's, less than a third of the time that it would take me to drive.
Yeah. See, I've flown a few times, but,
it's actually more than that because even in my youth, I don't think that I would have driven 17 hours straight without a stop.
Yeah.
And I definitely can't do that now. So if you're looking at a 17-hour drive, you're talking about a 2-day drive.
Yeah, you're going to break that up into two separate days.
Yeah, so you're like 4 days instead of 10 hours or total.
Yeah. Yeah. I flew to Tennessee one time, and so it was a 9-hour drive, and it took me 10 hours to fly there, and I was like, never again. Like, I'm not doing this. This is not worth it. Like, I could have drove it almost as quick as I flew it.
Yeah.
And the driving would have been more pleasant, at least for me.
Yeah, I don't mind flying. So, you can do kind of productive things in the plane, although I usually don't. I usually just strike up a conversation with whoever's sitting next to me.
Yeah.
And don't do anything productive.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like to read. I take a book. I've got a phone. It's got games on it.
Yeah.
There are games that get kind of boring, like chess and backgammon.
No.
And I'm terrible at chess against an AI.
Computers are smarter than you.
Stupid computer. Well, it can definitely calculate the odds better than me. Wow, that was a long intro. You weren't real keen on what I wanted to talk about. So what do you want to talk about to start?
It doesn't matter to me. We can talk about whatever you want.
No, go. You're carrying the weight today because I have been super busy and a little sick, so I have not really done a whole lot.
Well, I'm not a little sick, but definitely super busy. My mind's been occupied all day. Yeah. No, I kind of thought it might be worthwhile to talk about immigration a little bit. Mm-hmm. Seeing how it's in the news and everything with the
14,000 people under a bridge in South Texas.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I say, it's something to at least consider.
Yeah. Okay. So you have these Haitians that, I guess, boated to Mexico and then came up or something
so
like that.
So I actually did a little digging into this because this has been a big talk online because everybody's saying the same thing you are. Like, how did these Haitians end up in Mexico? Like, why are they coming at that border and not the closest border, which would be like Florida or something?
Right.
And what
Puerto
it is,
Rico, I think, would probably be their best way into the States. But
maybe.
Why would you want to escape Haiti into Puerto Rico?
Exactly. Well, which is the whole reason, like,
I'm just kidding, Puerto Rico. I lived in Puerto Rico. But
yeah, yeah, but that actually brings up another point, too, is like they're already in Mexico. So, like, they've already gotten out of their country that they were fleeing from. Like, shouldn't they just stay in Mexico and be happy there?
When you said that, I immediately thought of the Simpsons episode where Homer becomes the sanitation commissioner or whatever. Yeah. And he's talking about how, you know, you got to carry out your own stuff and all these things. He's like, that's not America. That's not even Mexico.
That's not even Mexico. Right.
So that's probably why.
Yeah. Well, obviously that's why, but
they have to carry out their own trash in Mexico and here.
Here a truck comes and takes it, right? Well, it turns out the reason these guys are down there, at least best that I can tell, is that they fled years ago and ended up in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And they've all of a sudden now decided that they want to come here. But these aren't like recent refugees from the earthquake. They're fleeing from a storm that was there years ago. Yeah.
It could be another earthquake. It could be a hurricane. Yeah. It could be
but
all kinds of things.
The everything I read seemed to say that this group that's trying to get in right now have been in Mexico for almost a decade.
Okay.
And that for whatever reason, they've made their way up this way, and that's that they didn't actually like get on the boat and go to Mexico and then try to come up through the southern border. Because the logistics of this are a little odd, to say the least.
I wonder why this entire community decided to migrate to the U.S. right
because
now.
Because Trump lost and Biden's supposed to be letting everybody in.
Oh, is that? Well, I mean, but if they'd been in Mexico for 10 years, like Obama was supposed to be letting everybody in too. I mean, he wasn't.
Yeah, well, but, and neither is Biden, by the way. Like he's got people on the horseback rounding them up.
Yeah. Well, okay, so do we put these Haitians in the same category as Afghani refugees that are trying to come to America now also? I mean, does that all fall under the same kind of immigration blanket that you're throwing here, or are they separate issues?
I would put them all in the same, but for my case, I would say, well, I don't want to let any of them in. I don't exactly want to let the Afghans in either.
Okay. So here's the case that I would make on behalf of both of these nationalities.
Yeah.
Like, the U.S. has gone a long way to screwing up both of those countries.
That's fair. Yeah.
So maybe we owe them.
Here's where my disconnect is on this. Mm-hmm. So like if we just let them in, like where are they going to go when they get here? Like, I mean, what do you do with these people who literally have nothing that are coming into this country?
I mean, aren't there a whole lot of wealthy elites that think that we should have open borders?
Well,
they'll take them in, right?
Hey, now if that's the case, I'm good with letting in the. Now if that's like a serious proposal, like I'm down. Like you've swayed me. but that's never the case. Like, where are these people going to end up? Like, you're just going to let 14,000
in Texas? They're going to end up under interstate overpasses, kind of where they are right now, probably.
Exactly.
You know, working odd construction jobs like the Mexican immigrant. I don't know.
Yeah. Which is where that's where my problem is. Like, mm-hmm. if we were going to bring these people in and we had a plan, I could be swayed.
Well, there's the Green New Deal. We could just put them to work converting everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we got plenty of people here. We could put to work doing that too, though.
Yeah. I mean, Biden promised a whole lot of high paying union jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. You think these guys got those type of skills?
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know either, but...
They managed to get from Haiti to Mexico.
Yeah, this is true. This is true.
Some level of skill involved in that, I think.
Right.
Okay. In all seriousness, I recognize the practical problems with open borders immigration.
Yeah.
Right now. My position isn't actually that we should be open borders right now. It's that open borders is not the problem.
Yeah.
You know, open borders is complicated by other things.
Yeah.
For a significant portion of this country's history, it was open borders. I am okay with, like, you signing the book as you come in.
Yeah.
I would kind of like to know who's here.
Yeah.
But I think that you create a lot of problems with a strict immigration policy that, or even a fairly loose immigration policy, but a centrally controlled immigration policy is a problem in and of itself.
Yeah.
I think that the problems that you create through the attempts to enforce an immigration policy are more dangerous
than letting the people in.
Well, I mean, I think that's an open debate,
because that's an argument I could be swayed by.
I don't know one way or the other. Yeah. But I think that that's an open debate. I think that that's by no means a settled question.
Yeah.
Border Patrol, where we live,
yeah,
can enter your backyard without your permission.
Yeah. And I obviously have a problem with that.
Yeah. And the whole reason for that is to try and keep other people out.
Yeah.
But they can infringe on your private property rights in order to enforce this, even though it has nothing to do with it. Now, on the other side of that,
yeah,
the question of responsibility is definitely an issue here.
Yeah.
And I think that it is hard to advocate an open immigration policy right now, because the people who end up having to foot the bill are the taxpayers that don't all agree to this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's...
And so that's an infringement of property rights as well.
Yeah.
But that's an infringement of property rights. Like, that's actually, you know, them taking money to cover whatever kind of public services these people would receive,
yeah,
is a drop in the bucket for the amount of money that you have to pay to the government for all kinds of things.
Yeah.
So I think that, but that is a problem in and of taxation is theft.
Yeah. Well, I can get on to the open borders argument, mm-hmm, if that's like the last link in the chain as far, yeah, as tearing down the government. Mm-hmm. Like, once the government is gone, yeah, open up the borders. I think there's a lot less, and it creates a situation where people that come here, mm-hmm, will like have a plan.
Yeah.
Because it, like, the Haitians at the border right now, like, those guys, who knows where they're going to end up when they get in here, and that doesn't help anybody.
Well, the other part of that is that the immigration policy as it stands makes it difficult for you to invite somebody from outside the country in to do work for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's hard for some things that really shouldn't be difficult. So, my friend in Charlotte, actually. Yeah. So he's born and bred American, but he lived in Honduras for a few years, yeah, several years. And while he was down there, he met a Brazilian girl and he married her.
Yeah.
And they had a daughter.
Yeah.
And then when the coup that that the U.S. played a hand in happened in Honduras, he had to leave.
Yeah.
It became very dangerous for him down there, and so he had to leave.
Yeah.
And so he tried to come back with his wife and daughter to the U.S.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let his wife and daughter in.
Wow.
Actually, I think they would have let his daughter in, but not his wife.
But not, yeah, yeah.
So he ended up having to go to her family in Brazil and live in abject poverty in the rainforest in Brazil for like 6 months before he could get his wife and daughter into the country.
Wow. Yeah.
That's a problem.
That's crazy. That's, oh yeah, that I 100% agree.
You know, so. and I understand the concern about marriage for green cards and so forth. But yeah, actually, I think if I understand you right,
yeah,
that wouldn't be an issue if you had your way in immigration policy. If somebody invited somebody else in.
Yeah. That's my thing is, mm-hmm. That's where I kind of stand on it. Like, if you've got an invitation, if you've got people here, I don't so much have a problem with you coming in. Mm-hmm. It's when we've got, you know, 14,000 Haitians that are like, and the same with Mexicans too. Like, I mean, if you've got people here already, if you've got like stuff lined up, even if it's a company that's willing to pay you to come into work, mm-hmm. like I'm good with that too.
Yeah.
I just don't think letting people just flood into the country untethered is a good idea though. Like,
yeah,
I mean, just like, letting 14,000 immigrants just like walk in is a problem though.
I understand, like, you know, if these 14,000 people settle in one community, like some small Texas community of 42,000 people.
Yeah.
Or something like that. They're suddenly a quarter of the population.
Yeah.
And can have real influence in a democratic system that maybe you don't want them to have.
Absolutely.
In the same way that people in Texas are already complaining about Californians coming down there.
And, doing the same thing. Yeah. Screwing up Texas.
I mean, but again, the concern is really the problem there, again, is really the power that government wields.
It is.
It's not these people. Yeah. And in the grand scheme of things, if you take the government out of the equation, actually, immigration could be solved in, I think it was Hornberger that used to say this, immigration could be solved in a weekend if you just took government out of the equation.
Oh, easily. And I agree with that. That's the reason I say that's the last link in the chain. Yeah. I don't think you open up the borders before you tear the government down because it will create so many other problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, but it creates some solutions as well. I remember when they became real strict about immigration into this state and we had some crops that didn't get picked because, you know, the people that lived here wouldn't work for the wages that they were being offered. It was only illegals that would do that.
Yeah.
And so, but that's an important point about immigration. Immigration does drive wages down. That's true. Yeah. It also drives prices down.
Yeah.
And you know, in a free market, that's not such a bad thing. Yeah. The big part of immigration policy is a protectionist economic policy.
Yeah.
And it's protecting special interests at the expense of all the rest of us.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
So. I don't mind having people answer a few questions before they come in here. Like,
yeah.
But the other big concern, like the safety concern, again, that's a problem that stems out of either, in the Afghani case, as a good example, or interventionism around the world.
Yeah.
Well, and that's, or in the other case, it's a problem of, I lost my train of thought.
Nah. Well, in the Afghani case, that is my issue with letting a bunch of the Afghanis come over here. Mm-hmm. It's like,
drug war is what I was going to say with the other one.
Yeah.
In terms of being concerned about criminal issues,
yeah.
The big driver of criminals crossing the border into the drugs. U.S. and the southern border is the drug war.
Yeah, you start legalizing
the prohibition. I was going to say
you start legalizing drugs, you fix a lot of that problem right mm-hmm. there. And the deal with the Afghanis, that's my biggest concern. Is I'm all for winding the wars down over there and all of that. Mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily all for bringing a bunch of them over, even the mm-hmm. ones that helped us. And I get the reasoning for it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not absolutely saying nobody that helped us should be let in. But I think there should be a very strict vetting process because, I mean, you just, especially if you just open the floodgates of Afghans coming over here, you can't tell me that some of them aren't going to be, have violent tendencies towards us.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's not like we haven't bombed their country for decades.
Yeah.
And so just because somebody helped us while we were over there doesn't mean they don't have some axe to grind when they get over here.
True. But how in the... I don't know how you vet in such a way to
prevent that. And that's the real problem, which is the reason why I'm not a big fan of bringing them over here. Well,
I get it. But again, you know, the reason that they're having to flee their country is mostly because of the U.S.
Yeah. Well, which is the reason I want us to get the hell out of there.
you know, and again, this is a government problem. It comes back to the government again. But but is it fair to go destroy a country and then say, no, sorry, you've got to deal with it there?
Yeah.
Like, we're not helping now.
Yeah.
We've done our damage. We're through.
Right.
I don't think that that's a, that certainly doesn't engender any goodwill either.
No. Oh, absolutely. So.
I mean, I don't know that there's a, I don't know that there's a good libertarian answer to this as it stands.
Yeah.
I think the good libertarian answer to this is, it's about private property. You can invite whoever you want onto your property.
Yeah.
The problem is that there's a whole lot of public property.
Yeah.
You know, it becomes like the public property, becomes one of these tragedy of the commons. Like, nobody takes responsibility for it in the end.
Yeah.
It belongs to nobody. And so nobody, or it belongs to everybody. And so nobody,
takes care of it. Yeah.
In truth, we know that it doesn't belong to everybody anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, with if it was all private property, then people along the border could invite people in if they so chose.
Yeah.
And if the adjoining properties didn't want those people in, they can exclude them. And so they only get one property into the United States.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. And again, the voting issue is a concern because government wields so much power. If you stripped back government, especially federal government, to the constitutional level, that's a whole lot less of a problem.
Exactly. So we're not
like
as far,
even if they're voting and you know, they're not supposed to be, that's supposed to be one of the privileges of being a citizen here. And there's supposed to be a process to become a citizen here as well. But
yeah, we're not as far apart on this issue as we think, but I am not, I don't currently advocate for open borders though, because of the reasons we kind of just talked about.
Yeah. I do advocate for open borders, but on an ideological level, mostly because I don't, to me, saying that open borders is a terrible idea is throwing out the baby with the bathwater. Open borders is not the problem. It's other things that create a problem with open borders. And I want people to focus on those problems that government creates and how the open borders question, like border issues, could be solved by removing those problems, not by locking everybody out. Yeah.
The problem is we're not there yet as far as solving the other issues. And I don't think that you can open the borders up without solving the other issues first.
Yeah, it's true, but I want people to think long term.
Yeah.
Including in how to solve those issues.
Yeah.
I think that when you advocate a closed borders position, you're essentially giving people an excuse not to worry about the rest of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the truth is I'm more worried about the rest of it than I am the border in reality anyway. Mm-hmm. Like when you have my hierarchy of issues, like border's pretty low.
Yeah.
I mean, it just is because it's not an issue that really directly, I mean, I don't live on the border. So
yeah, you do.
Well, I mean, I do in the respect that the government can chomp on my property anytime they want.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, people come up this way, too. I'm sure that people enter the U.S. through the port and mobile. I mean.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true. Which that may be something a lot of people don't know is like, so how exactly does that work? Anywhere 100 miles of the border, including the oceans and the water border, like you have basically ICE can do whatever the hell they want. Like they can come on your property and that's something
without
else.
Without your permission.
That is something else that I have a big issue with is ICE in general. Mm-hmm. So while I do believe in, at least with the status quo that we have now, like enforcing the border and not leaving it open and not letting people in, I have a problem with ICE once people are in the country. Just once they're in here, screw it. They're in here.
Yeah.
We don't need ICE coming and kicking down doors and coming after people.
Checking
people's papers. Yeah. Like that I absolutely have an issue with, period.
Yeah. I mean, you run into the same problem there with the enforcement of so many things, like the drug war is a really good example of that too, is that it creates an environment for proactive policing.
Yep.
And proactive policing leads to conflict.
Yeah. And I am against proactive policing in virtually all scenarios. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, very few exceptions, I would say.
Yeah. And just for people out there that may not understand, what I mean by proactive policing is police going out and interrupting people that don't appear to be doing anything wrong to see if they might be doing something wrong. Exactly. Now, I'm not saying that if a policeman sees somebody trying to break into a house, they shouldn't stop it.
Well, yeah.
I'm saying that stopping somebody randomly and then searching them for drugs or checking their papers to make sure that they're legal or what have you, in yeah. absence of any other evidence, essentially, that creates a conflict.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm opposed to.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, I think that this is a little bit of an aside. I was thinking about this the other day. I was thinking about it because of the, the police that pulled up on the side and pulled over on the side of the road to catch the speeders out in front of my office.
Yeah.
And I thought, it seems to me that there's a lot of things that person would be more valuable in the sense of securing the community.
Yeah.
Doing.
Yeah.
There's right? got to be something else that guy could be doing that would make our community more secure than making sure that nobody's going 40 in a 35.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, I don't want them breaking down doors and checking people everywhere and so forth to try and enforce the law.
Yeah.
But if you had more people that were investigating and trying to close crimes that had been committed, you're like, oh, okay, well, but it's too late by then. The crime's already been committed.
Yeah.
But if they actually did a good job of closing crimes that were committed, fewer people would commit crimes.
I was fixing to say, exactly. There would be less crimes committed because people knew they stood a better chance of being caught.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of wasted energy in that department. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, just like...
I still believe that the main purpose of at least local law enforcement is to raise funds for whatever their precinct is.
It's a tax arm. Mm-hmm. They're tax collectors. That's all they are.
Yeah.
Yep. In the purest sense.
You remember what Robin Hood did, right?
Exactly. So...
Anything else you got on that?
Not really. I just, with everything going on, I felt like that was something that was worth having at least a discussion on.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, and I thought that people might enjoy it because there's more space between us on that than there is on a lot of things.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Although mostly you just agreed with me in the end anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I think we come at it from different, we're pretty close though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, I agree that in ideology, at least, that we're pretty close.
Yeah.
I would certainly loosen things up on the border right now, and yeah. I think that you would tighten things up on the border.
I would, at least on the border. Now, mm-hmm. like I say, the ICE and all of that stuff aside,
yeah.
but like I'm all for, yeah, securing mm-hmm. the border in the current state.
Yeah, And in terms of the refugees, like from Afghanistan, just to add another point, or maybe give some kind of metaphor,
yeah.
It's like if you went and burned down somebody's house,
yeah.
you might have some responsibility in ensuring that they have shelter.
Yeah.
So
the problem I have with this metaphor, though, is I didn't burn anybody's house down.
Yeah, but you see my point. Like I understand.
I see your point.
I try to do a very good job of separating U.S. government from U.S. citizens.
Yeah.
And it is a government created problem.
Absolutely.
But again, it doesn't matter much to the Afghan people.
Yeah.
Like yeah. somebody owes them something.
Yeah.
I would be perfectly happy to take it out of the salaries of the federal employees at the Pentagon or something like that to take care of this.
Absolutely.
But I don't think that it helps us in the long run to ignore the problem as a country.
Well, and the the goal is to win the hearts and minds anyway. Mm. Like, I mean, because that's how more terrorists are created, is by going over there and bombing innocent civilians.
Yeah, but we're terrible at winning hearts and minds.
Yeah, well, because we're over there bombing innocent civilians.
Yeah. Well, and that...
that kind of moves us to our next subject.
Yeah, that's how we left Afghanistan, of course. Yeah. The thing that I'd actually kind of like to focus on this, and I imagine everybody knows the story at this point, that after the attacks at the airport, Biden announced that we did a drone strike and took care of the planners, or what, I can't remember who exactly, but people involved with ISIS-K and so forth.
ISIS-K, yeah.
Then it came out later that what we'd actually done is bombed a family, killed at least 10 civilians, including at least 7 children.
Yeah.
And that we didn't hit anybody that was a terrorist.
Well, that's what came out in the end, but it was a slow walk to that. So initially they were like, oh, we got them. Like, we got them. That was kind of all it was. And then it was like, well, we may have got some innocents when we got them, mm-hmm. but we still got them.
Yeah.
And then it eventually came out, well, as it turns out, we didn't get anybody. Everybody we bombed was innocent.
Yeah. Well, and it came out because of independent journalism.
Absolutely.
Journalists went in there and were interviewing people and did their own investigation, including looking at security video and so forth. Up until that information was released by the journalists, the U.S. maintained that it had done everything right.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think it was Milley actually that came out and said that it was a righteous strike.
Yeah.
So they almost certainly knew better.
Yeah.
Now the way the story goes, they were following this guy around for a long time, and we've talked about signature strikes repeatedly on this podcast.
Yep.
And I've actually had some people tell me that I was just paranoid and silly to think that, the story that I tell about how signature strike might work, in that, I'm going to the office and it seems I can't find my phone, and I'm like, oh shoot, I've forgot my phone, and I do like a couple of left turns to start heading back towards the house so that I can pick up my phone. And then I hear it buzzing. Yeah. And I don't know where it is. I'm like, okay, so fine. So I pull over on the side of the road and I stop for a minute while I'm searching around for my phone. And I find it under the seat. Okay. Well, there's my phone. I put it back in my pocket. I do another U-turn and start heading back towards the office. Now that could get me targeted because it looks like I'm doing counter surveillance.
Yeah.
Trying to lose a tail or identify if somebody's following me.
Yeah.
And so that would be potentially reason enough to drop a bomb on me.
Yeah. All right.
And that's essentially what happened here. Yeah. They followed this guy around for a while. He was working for some aid organization, as I understand it.
Yeah.
And he was moving things around from place to place, and he was he loaded up his car with what they thought might be some kind of explosive. It turned out to be water bottles because they didn't have any water at the house. And he lived close enough to the airport that it could have been used as a staging area for a strike. And that's what it took.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the world that some people are living in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, that's like, if you live in Afghanistan or some of these other places where we use these tactics, like, that's really all it takes for you to get bombed.
Yeah. I encourage people to look into the effects and the methods of the drone war.
Yeah.
It's unreal. Like, and and they're trying to bring it back here.
Yeah. Well, that's the really scary part is, like, it's bad enough that anybody's having to live under these conditions and have these type of things happen to them.
Yeah.
But these same tactics are trying to be used in this country.
Yeah.
Like, we're moving in that direction.
Yeah. It has, but I just like a short little bit about it is that places where we're engaged in a drone war, the U.S. government is engaged in a drone war, the U.S. military has significantly higher rates of PTSD because you can hear them.
Yeah.
You can hear them flying above you.
Yeah.
And you think the lockdowns are bad here because the government's telling you should stay inside because you might get sick.
Yeah.
In those places, they hear these things and they have to stay inside because they might get a bomb dropped on them.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't know who it's after.
Yeah. You don't want to be standing in the wrong place, and they hit the wrong place with some frequency.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a whole lot more than the government lets on.
Yeah.
This case is a good example.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that the U.S. government really was so certain that they hit nothing but terrorists.
Yeah.
They had to know better. And they started walking it back once some information started coming out.
Yeah.
And that, to me, indicates that they knew better and they just hoped that the whole story would never come out. But it did.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was hard to get them to admit anything. And in the end, they're like, well, we'll pay the families or whatever. Oh, yeah, that makes up for it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. In another sense, it's like the perfectly poetic way for us to leave Afghanistan.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's been a boondoggle since we got there.
Yeah. Be attacked by not the people we were fighting on the way out.
Yeah.
And then drop a bomb on not the people we were fighting.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Or it was responsible for the people that attacked us on the way out.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly. We just hit a bunch of civilians and a bunch of kids.
Yeah, yeah, no.
And that's like a perfect representation of what a...
of everything this war stood for.
Yeah, what a mix-up the entire thing was.
Yeah, yeah.
And that guy, Milley, who told us it was a righteous strike.
Yeah.
I think it was him. I could be wrong about that. I probably shouldn't hold him to that quote because I don't remember for certain that was him.
Yeah.
Could have been Kirby or something. Who knows? Anyway, there's some information has been released related to Bob Woodward's new book that this guy contacted a Chinese general in the waning days of the Trump presidency and told the general that if the president intended to attack China, it wouldn't be a surprise because he would let him know.
Which, by definition, is treason.
Well, if we were at war, I think. I mean, you know, they kind of toe the line about whether China's an enemy or whatever. They start using words like adversary in the same way that we used police action instead of war in Vietnam, I think.
Yeah.
But... like there's so many things wrong with this. I don't even know where really to begin. First off, I'm kind of curious what it was that made him think that. I think that he would have to know better because while Trump was certainly waging what I would consider an economic war with China, a economic protectionist war with China, he didn't show any indication that he wanted to be involved militarily much of anywhere.
Right. Yeah.
And certainly not with China.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure where the idea that Trump, I mean, it's fallen into the, you know, Trump derangement in the sense that, well, in both senses, actually, that Trump was so deranged that he could do anything.
Yeah.
And that this guy had the Trump derangement syndrome to the point that he thought that that was true.
Yeah. 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 I mean, he had already orchestrated the January 6th incident.
Like, yeah.
You know.
I mean, okay. And so that's an interesting point, too, because on January 8th, so the insurrection on January 6th that Trump, quote unquote, orchestrated, which, whatever. We've talked about that enough, probably, anyway. But on January 8th, this guy, Milley, now he's chairman of the Joint Chiefs.
Okay.
All right. He called together top military commanders to the Pentagon on January 8th and gave them instructions not to execute any orders that came from the commander in chief unless they had gone through him
first. Milley. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Milley, as chairman of the Joint Chiefs, is the top military advisor to the president.
Advisor.
Yes. He has absolutely no command authority.
Yeah.
None.
Yeah.
None.
But he basically just took the military over.
Yeah.
At least during that period of time.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that that could be defined in many ways as a military coup.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just
like that's an insurrection, it seems to me.
I would agree.
To tell the military not to listen to the elected president, that he was in charge now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'm sure that there are plenty of people out there. Okay, so there's some funny things about this, too. I'm sure there are plenty of people out there that say, well, you know, it's actually, I know, because that's how it's been played in the media. Like, thank goodness we had Milley there to make sure that the president wouldn't launch a war on China in the waning days of his presidency.
Yeah.
Now, in some ways, I agree with that, except for the part where there was any possibility that Trump was going to launch a war against China.
But let's be clear about what Milley did here. So if Trump had decided to launch a war, he wouldn't have actually stopped anybody. He would have just let them know so they could hit us first.
Yeah. Or, you know, defend and wipe out our operation, whatever it happened to be.
Yeah.
This is another, this goes back to the doomsday machine thing too. So what if Milley was so paranoid about this that he made this call on an assumption that Trump was doing something?
Yeah, incorrectly.
And the response from China was to launch their 300 to 400 nuclear missiles at us.
Yeah, yeah. Just because this guy was paranoid over something that wasn't going
to
happen.
Yeah, it is hard to really define how dangerous this could be.
Yeah.
But that being said, if somehow Trump had decided to do this, for some reason Trump had decided to do this and wanted to launch a nuclear attack on really anybody.
Yeah.
I would hope that there would be somebody like Milley that would put a stop to it.
Yeah.
That would stand in the way.
Yeah.
And these kind of things have happened
but
in the
past.
But
that's going to be the guy that's got his finger on the button. That's not necessarily going to
be...
That was
Trump, don't you know?
Well, yeah, but that's not going to be Milley. There's going to be some commander that has to execute the order to launch the missiles.
Yeah, and this has happened in the past where, you know, what seemed to be legitimate command authority came down to launch missiles, and people stalled.
Yeah. Yeah,
because I certainly hope, now this was a long time ago when the threat of nuclear war was at the front of everybody's mind, where people had seen a nuclear blast in the aftermath, you know, in their lifetimes, or a lot more of them had, you know.
Yeah.
But I certainly hope that still today, people that have that responsibility recognize what a huge thing that is.
Yeah.
Like, recognize the weight of that.
Yeah.
Now, if I had my way, we would just get rid of all these weapons.
Yeah. That's
As long as they exist, they're a danger.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how well it's safeguarded. All these safeguards only work until they don't, and they only have to fail one time.
Yeah. Well,
one time.
It's a difficult thing, though, because how do you put the genie back in the bottle? There's no way all of these countries are going to give these things up. Like, we just don't live in that environment.
Well, I think it may have been Scott Horton, but, you know, somebody else that I listened to, I'm pretty sure it was Scott Horton, said, well, the U.S. would just have to take the first step.
Yeah.
And get rid of all our nuclear weapons. Because the truth is, we don't need them.
Yeah.
We've got more than enough conventional munitions to...
Wipe out anything we need.
Any nation in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So we don't need them to threaten to destroy another nation.
Yeah.
And it would be a good first step for the U.S. to say, look, we really think that this is such a danger to humanity.
Yeah.
That we are getting rid of all of ours, and we hope and pray that you all do the same.
Yeah. And remind everybody as we do it that we can still wipe you out.
Well, I don't think we need to.
Yeah.
I don't. I think that. I think that everybody that is in the nuclear game knows that.
Yeah. Maybe.
That's
an interesting thought. I never considered that, but I mean that actually makes a lot of sense.
Well, you know, I've been reading Ellsberg's book, The Doomsday Machine, and essentially the grand point of all this is that as long as these things exist, it is a ticking time bomb.
Oh yeah,
and it will go off.
Yeah, it's only a question of when.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that we've made it this far is kind of amazing.
Yeah. It's a bit of a miracle. There's been some divine intervention to have gotten this far.
Yeah.
But it only has to fail one time.
Yeah. No, it's true.
And, you know, you're talking about really the end of civilization.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. At least as we know it.
Yeah.
Then that's when the roaches take over.
Yeah. I mean, you know, some people would survive and people would have to rebuild and it would be very different. But you're practically starting from scratch.
Yeah, yeah. So civilization as we know it would cease to exist.
Yeah. I would hope that were this legitimately to come up, there would be somebody like Milley to step in and stop it.
Yeah.
But the other danger of this is that a military leader stepped in and subverted the civilian control of the military, control of the duly by the duly elected president of the United States. And that is the president's primary job. And it was done very purposefully to have the military in civilian hands.
Yeah.
And by an elected official.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about the deep state all the time. This is the deep state. These guys at the Pentagon, these unelected bureaucrats and military leaders, to think that they would be making the decisions about what the U.S. military is getting involved in. And frankly, I think that they do most of the time anyway, so it's already scary. But yeah. But these are people who benefit potentially from additional wars and conflicts.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that they have something to prove, and that's frightening as well. Now, to me, the real answer to this problem, because we want civilian control of the military. We don't want the military to control the military. That's just dangerous.
Oh, yeah, yeah. they only have one tool and one fix.
Yeah, like yeah. When all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail,
that's
right?
What that's what I was looking for, expression. Yeah. Absolutely.
The answer to this is to go back to the constitutional way it's supposed to be done.
Yeah.
That you take what's the term to act totally on your own?
Unilateral?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. To take the unilateral control of the military, of strikes by the military, away from the president. The president was never supposed to have that power.
Yeah.
The
president, they got to go to Congress. Congress has to sign off on it.
Exactly. And it's not like you couldn't get a quorum together in essentially no time for a vote on.
It would be way easier now than it was back then.
Yeah.
When this was all came up with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, war proceeds a lot faster than it did back then too.
It's fair, but still though.
Yeah.
Technology's kept up.
Yeah. Well, it's mostly been driven by the military, I would say. The answer to the concern about the president launching a unilateral war against another nation is to put the power of war back in the Congress where it was supposed to be.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. And I think you'd see a lot less, because the reason we're so freely able to go to war is because nobody in Congress really has to pay the piper.
Right.
Because the American people overall, at least, are anti-war.
Mm-hmm.
Any congressman that voted for a war that was BS would pay at the ballot box.
Yeah. I mean, at least with the terror wars over the last few years, all the polls I've seen show a supermajority of Americans being opposed to them.
Yeah. Now, the truth is going into Afghanistan, like, that had public support at the time.
It did.
Like, it absolutely did.
Well, that's because they lied to us. Does it really count? Is it really public support if you had to lie to get...
Well, there's a lot of truth in that too, and I get where you're going, mm-hmm. but at the same time, at least there was public support. You can at least make that argument though that we would have went into that war had Congress had to have. Mm-hmm. But I don't think
we'd have left it a lot sooner.
I don't think that we could have got Iraq in that way though.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I think that Iraq would have because I know Iraq's where I saw the light. Like, yeah. I mean, I was all for Afghanistan, but once we started talking about Iraq, that's when I was like, whoa, 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 let's pump the brakes here. Yeah.
Well, so moving beyond that to things that a lot of people don't know about. What about Somalia?
Yeah.
We went back into Somalia very quickly after we went into Afghanistan.
Yeah.
So Somalia, Yemen, Syria, Libya, Mali, we're all over the place. How many Americans would have been on board with all of that?
Yeah, not very many. And one more thing, talking about Afghanistan, we wouldn't have been hit on 9/11 if
we hadn't been bombing Iraq for all that time.
Exactly.
For a decade.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you turn it over to the Congress, that stuff doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Because those like I say, those congressmen would pay the price.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think none of that could have been sold to the American people. The only reason they could have sold...
It probably would have helped, too, if Madeleine Albright hadn't gone on national television and said that the deaths of 500,000 children, Iraqi children, was worth it.
Yeah, right? That was a price worth paying.
Yeah. I have a radical liberal aunt. I love her. Yeah. And you know, she's very involved and engaged with politics. And I don't even remember what the argument was about it that started that, but it ended up leading to that.
Yeah.
You know, that statement about Madeleine Albright being on 60 Minutes and being asked point blank if she thought that the starvation deaths of 500,000 Iraqi children, which was the estimate by the UN at the time, from our blockade and bombing, was worth the price to try and get Saddam Hussein out of power. And she said, yeah, we think it's worth it.
We think it is. Yeah.
And I said that, you know, that's just, this is like one of the most terrible things I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And she said, well, so my aunt says, well, I mean, I don't have the context there. Like you're just telling me this one bit. I said, well, in what context do you think it is justifiable for the deaths of 500,000 children to push one autocrat out of power?
Yeah, absolutely.
If you can come up with a scenario where that seems justifiable to you, I'd like to hear it.
Yeah.
The answer is to push it back into Congress. And the reason that the war powers were put in Congress in the first place by the founding fathers is because they saw the executive as the executive branch is the branch most likely to abuse the power of the military.
Absolutely.
The one most interested and least deterred from going to war.
Yeah. Well, they got the most to gain from it.
Yeah.
You know.
And so this was, you know, very pointedly done, but we've just removed that entirely. And part of the answer is, like I said earlier, well, now it's a police action or a single strike or a retaliatory strike or whatever they call it. Like that, we don't call anything war anymore. We haven't declared war since World War II.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've been at war pretty much constantly since then.
Since then, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Biden said the other day that for the first time in 20 years, the U.S. is not at war.
Yeah, that's just not the case.
Yeah. Now, if first off, we are still actively involved, military actively involved in several places.
Yeah.
And the other part of that is like if we use the definition that he would have to be using in order to make that statement, which is that we haven't declared war on any nation, or we're not actively at war with any nation with which we've declared war.
Yeah.
Then it's been more than 20 years. It's been 70.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
75.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
And, but that's, you know,
and everybody knows that's not the case.
Yeah. You know? I don't know. That's all I got. You got anything else?
No, that's really all I got, man.
Yeah, I don't think that was too bad for a podcast that I had absolutely zero time to prepare for.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're gonna of course keep at this. Schedules are weird right now. For those who don't know, I work in the insurance industry, and so Ida has
increased your workload?
Yes, quite a bit. And it's only going to get worse over the next couple of weeks, I suspect.
Yeah.
Is how it usually goes. Yeah. So we'll do our best. And it may not have as much research behind it as it usually does. I still read and so forth, but I don't have time to dive deep.
Yeah.
And
so, well, maybe we can take on more philosophical questions.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I mean, that's you know, kind of how we geared this podcast initially anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So. I can blow smoke for 45 minutes.
ask the big questions.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the reason I wanted to dive into immigration today. I mean, it was in the news, and it is kind of a bigger question. The question's bigger than what is in the news, you know? So kind of get down into that.
You know? I'm kind of a big picture guy anyway. I like the far outlook.
Absolutely.
The plan, of course, though, is to be back in a week. In the meantime, you know, try and, follow us on, I always forget all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
Follow us on Facebook, subscribe on iTunes, Podbean, YouTube. You can always visit our website. You can download the podcast from there as well. Liberty Larry will probably give me some more pushes about writing more.
Yeah.
Hey. Or writing again. Yeah. Is probably a more appropriate way of stating that.
I just wanted to take a little victory lap at the end of this podcast. We didn't discuss COVID at all.
Well, now you've ruined it.
I ruined it, but it was worth it. Mention it. It just occurred to me. I was like, this is kind of nice. This is a good change of pace.
Yeah.
I like it, man.
Can't help it, man. It's just in the news.
Well, it is, but it was good to have a podcast where, mm-hmm. I mean, I just brought it up, so I guess it came up at some point, but still though. Like, no,
bringing it up to point out how we didn't bring it up.
Yeah.
Not quite the same as.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I'm just saying, take a little victory lap there.
Excellent. I have a drink after this.
Yeah.
So like and subscribe, share, comment. You can always email me at michael@thelibertymike.com. Is that everything?
I think that's it, man.
Okay. Well,
good enough.
Yeah.
Good enough for government work.
Exactly. Doesn't take much. Yep. All right. So we will be back in a week when we finally get this right. And in the meantime, try to stay free.
Life's short. Live free.
Ciao.
Later.